Women's Caucus, produced by Valerie Hennell for the Radio Workshop, the Department of Creative Writing at UBC, for broadcast on UBC Radio. CYBR, UBC Radio, now presents a look at the Women's Caucus. This program was produced for the CBC by Valerie Hennell in the studios of CYBR, UBC Radio, in conjunction with the Radio Workshop of the Department of Creative Writing at UBC. More than 50 years have passed since the women of North America fought for and won the right to vote, thus taking a large step toward equality of the sexes. Now, women are organizing once again across the continent to protest what they call the mass oppression of women. Vancouver's Women's Caucus is a part of this international movement.
What are the issues that women's liberation are basically concerned with?
Women's liberation has historically been started through a group of women getting together to struggle for the liberation of other people. Women interested in a more just kind of society began to realize that they were cranking out leaflets and making coffee and doing the cooking, and they were struggling for somebody else's liberation, and they themselves were not liberated. And these women began to be aware of their own oppression, began talking about it, and realized it was not an individual thing, but it was more mass-based. Out of this came an analysis that women are oppressed as a mass, and there is an economic basis for that oppression.
The position of women isn't just an accident. You can see that because it didn't change after women got the vote. They didn't just vote themselves into positions of equality or even of power, as many men feel, that it's built right into the social system.
The different levels of the oppression of women's liberation are inseparable, and you can't say the priority is simply equal pay for equal work or control over your own body via abortion and adequate birth control. You can't talk just in terms of equality in the professions for women, a better educational system. You have to begin to attack all the institutions together. Now, what Women's Caucus does is they involve women who are interested in a specific area of work around a project. It's like there is a working women's group that deals with and does research around, agitates for equal pay for equal work. Some of these struggles are waged through the unions. Others of them are just where there is no union, or just raised through the office and talking to other women. There is an abortion clinic which, you know, in a very real way serves the people, because 5,000 women a year die of abortion in this country. And I don't know how many people are aware of the real brutality of what abortion is for women, the degradation of a woman having to, having no control or no right, being punished essentially because of her biological function.
Women's Caucus. Yes, we do have an abortion clinic. It operates every Tuesday evening in our office, which is in the Labor Temple, room 6, 307 West Broadway.
An abortion clinic in the Labor Temple.
That's right. Well, it's an abortion campaign. We're starting Valentine's Day, February 14th, with a march through the city, passing out pamphlets and ending up with a rally around the issue of repealing all abortion laws. The campaign will continue over 2 months, and on Mother's Day, we will start a cavalcade to Ottawa, carrying a coffin symbolizing the thousands of women who die every year from illegal abortions, and carry this coffin all the way to Ottawa, picking up women's liberation groups and other interested women, and converge on Ottawa to pressure the federal government.
Presently, what is the federal government's position on abortion? What kind of control do they have?
Well, the new law that was passed last year allows abortion if a panel of doctors in a hospital, and perhaps psychiatrists if it's for a mental reason, give permission to the woman to have that abortion. And we maintain that it is a right of every woman to control their own body, to decide whether she wants that child, can economically afford it, or emotionally wants to have another child. So the federal government then is limiting the woman's right by putting it in the hands of a panel of doctors.
Does it take a long time for a woman to get an abortion once she gets to this panel of doctors? Is there a lot of red tape involved?
Yes, there is. That process of going to her own doctor, being referred to the hospital, having a report before the panel of doctors usually takes at least 4 weeks.
My hips are a desk. From my ears hang chains of paper clips, rubber bands for my hair. My breasts are wells of mimeograph ink. My feet bear casters. Buzz, click. My head is a badly organized file. My head is a switchboard where crossed lines crackle. My head is a wastebasket of worn ideas. Press my fingers, and in my eyes appear credit, debit, zing, tinkle. My navel is a reject button. From my mouth issue canceled reams, swollen, heavy, rectangular. I am about to be delivered of a baby Xerox machine. File me under W, because I once was a woman.
Women have one kind of work to do, men have another kind of work to do, and it just so happens that the work women do results in them being less educated, less free, just in general being second-class citizens. Also very, very much underpaid.
We've recently formed a workshop in conjunction with the new educational and research center established in the city. And we're getting together women who are working to discuss why they're getting unequal pay for equal work and what they can do about that, why they've been excluded from a role in the unions, why unions have, through all of history, ignored women's particular problems.
You feel that it's difficult then for a woman to have a high-paid career?
I think it's very, very difficult. You can see that by the numbers of women who end up in high-paid careers. And it's not just discrimination, it's what we call channeling, that it begins when you're very, very young.
Well, surely there are some women who, through sheer determination, have beat the odds and have secured themselves some kinds of career. Why are they the exception?
Because channeling is a very subtle kind of thing. That you start out with a little girl age 6 months or so, and even that early, and particularly a year or two, and give her dolls and tea sets and frilly little clothes. And you keep doing that for years and years, and her drive and determination to make it in a hard, tough man's world just isn't there. Now, my experience has been that if somehow the drive and determination is there, there isn't that much hard discrimination.
I'd like to say that if you have the drive and determination to succeed and be successful in certain careers which have been defined as acceptable for women, well then you can make it to the top even though you do encounter some difficulties.
Which careers are
those?
Well,
like if you're in teaching, if you're in nursing, if
you make lipstick.
Yeah, you know, fashion, you know, modeling. But if you want to go into what has been defined as a male job, you will then just, I mean, I have come across comments where, I'm sorry, I don't have anything against women, it's just against company policy. Or, no thanks, I don't want your affiliation, we just don't hire women.
What about the fact that women now have equal opportunity in education?
And that's somewhat true at the undergraduate level. You won't find as much discrimination. As soon as you get into graduate level, they often have quotas on women, and professors will tell you, we just don't want to waste our time educating women.
The professor I did my graduate work with keeps telling the people in his department that, well, we really should be letting these women in. I had this one girl graduate student, and look how well she turned out. That's me. You see, I'm the example, and that he is now pushing to let women in, and that see the opposite side of it is that his whole department is against it.
She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She don't look back. She can take the dark out of the nighttime and paint the daytime black.
We also have an artist women's co-op. And what the artist women's co-op deals with is, we began with a group of women artists who couldn't really find expression in a male-dominated artist studio. I mean, the same kinds of things that happen in the office were happening in the artist studio. Women were not defined as artists. That was sort of secondary. Women were getting compliments such as, you paint like a man. And so a group of women got together to form a co-op to deal with poetry around the oppression of women, to do painting, to set up essentially a cultural center for women. Right now they're in the process of setting up a library, which the public will have access to, and doing a lot of exciting projects as a cooperative. There's no profit. Anything that's sold through the artist co-op is pooled, and the profits go towards women's liberation.
We publish a newspaper called The Pedestal, which began last September on an occasional basis, and we've had now 3 issues, and the publication has now become monthly. We thought this was a very important thing to do, because one of the things that women in this society are really discouraged from doing is writing and communicating with each other about their own situations. So The Pedestal does not just state the position of Women's Caucus, it attempts to get women in various situations to write about the situation that they're in and the possibilities of changing it.
What the liberation part of it in the name seems to mean is that for many women, is that for years and years they've known something's wrong, but they've thought it was an individual failure. You think it's something wrong with you. Why couldn't I get an education? Why did I drop out of school? Why am I so unhappy with this beautiful house and these 2 lovely children and the 2 cars in the garage? And they think of it all as an individual failure. The liberation part comes when you see that it's embedded in the social system, and that changes in the social system can change the kind of life that you lead. And see, getting it outside yourself is a very, very liberating thing, and it liberates the power of women to change things.
A great majority of advertising in North America is aimed specifically at women, who are offered products ranging from sleekly feminine cigarettes to personalized deodorants. As women look to liberation, the advertisers change tax accordingly. A leading brassiere manufacturer placed the following advertisement in a recent issue of the New York Times.
Probably the strongest feeling most of you have about any anti-bra movement is one of embarrassed confusion. Everyone seems to have an opinion and nobody the facts. Well, we at Peter Pan are going to try to set you straight on this whole business. We're not going to tell you not to wear a bra, and we're not going to tell you to wear a bra. What we hope to do is clear your head about a few things so you can decide what's best for yourself. The feminists say, take off your bra. Supporters of women's liberation movements will tell you the bra symbolizes everything that's anti-female in our male-dominated society. A shackle some man thought up to keep you in your place and under his thumb. A weapon used to exploit the female consumer. Take it off, they urge, and let the woman in you rise and conquer the puppet you've been. The designers say, take off your bra. Today, the people who dictate fashion styles and trends are all for a body that's clean and natural-looking. But what does your body tell you? Before you take off your bra for good, take off your bra and take a good look at your body. You've got the body. All you need is the guts.
Women's liberation, one of the things that we want to do is to begin to redefine and break through a mythology that is so destructive that it makes human relationships impossible. I mean, the whole question, the advertisement of women's liberation says, take off the bra, and that's a manifestation of liberation. That, of course, can be co-opted, as Mademoiselle magazine points out, where they devoted an entire issue to the braless look. Women are still being used to make a profit for those people that oppress us the most.
Janelle Jolly recently represented Simon Fraser University and Women's Caucus at the Miss Canadian University contest held at Waterloo Lutheran University.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, tonight, on this very stage, we are going to select Miss Globe of 1970, that one girl in the whole world who best exemplifies the highest ideals of the human race and also has a groovy body.
What about the issue of sexual objectification of women?
Yes, that's an issue that, of course, I spent the last 3 weeks beginning to expose at the beauty contest in Waterloo. And at that time, we had some very interesting experiences with women. And as I explained before, and I had been fairly consistent in explaining throughout my campaign, I was not out to attack those women because I understand the pressures on this society, on those women, to make them want to be more desirable sexual commodities. And it's a very, very difficult question because here you're dealing with 32 beautifully socialized women who accept their role totally, who still believe in the mythology that they do have a choice, that they chose to be put in a situation where fur companies make a profit off of them, choose to be put in a situation where the only arena in this society in which they appear is in the Toronto Globe and Mail in a circle of 32 gorgeous legs and a man sitting in the middle trying to look up their skirts. We had to have an understanding, and we had to create that understanding in these women that I really am no different than you are. I still consider it a compliment when some sleazy television producer puts his hand on my knee and says, "My, but you're so attractive." And, you know, what I have to begin to talk to this woman about is to tell her that it's the institutions in this society that have made me view myself that way, and that I'm struggling against those institutions. I'm struggling against that socialization. And that's the only thing that makes us different. And she has to at some point begin to confront that if she wants to have any kind of realization of her true potential as a creative human being. If she doesn't just want to exist as most people in this society do, as a consumer or a commodity.
Where do you see women's liberation going?
Well, I see the women's liberation movement existing right now essentially at a propaganda stage. The movement is only a year old in Vancouver. We already have a mailing list of approximately 300 women. You know, when you define a movement as existing at a propaganda stage, that doesn't just mean we go on CBC and we go on to lectures at ladies' clubs and that sort of thing. I think it's a force that has to make itself visible in terms of actions, demonstrations, of confrontation, beginning to really challenge. I mean, when I challenged that beauty contest, the veneer of a beauty contest is so thin and so easily shattered. And just our presence there of 200 women singing Solidarity Forever and being able to march up on that stage with absolutely no opposition, seize the microphone and give my message, you know, that really in a very real kind of way confronted the institution of a beauty contest. Now, I don't think that Waterloo Lutheran University is going to have a beauty contest next year. And that's a very important kind of thing. It's a very important kind of breakthrough.
You mentioned earlier that women's liberation grew out of a movement to liberate all people, not just women. What are the implications of this?
When you have the analysis that this society has to be radically changed in order to meet the needs of all the people, not just women, but all the people, you have to decide in which way can that system be radically changed best. Now, I feel that there is a mass base for organization among women to fight against their oppression. Like, you don't, there's never been any kind of a movement which struggles for the liberation of a mass group of people just because it's nice. People are only going to struggle for liberation when it means their own interests.
I think the basic problem in my own understanding of it, within society, is really a problem of male dominance. I think that's the most important thing that has to be identified. That is, that it's men who occupy the kinds of positions, whether it be within the family, whether it be within a university, in a workplace, or in society at large, men who occupy the positions of power that control and regulate other people, and of course women. I think what male chauvinism is it's the set of attitudes, approaches, in a sense it's an ideology, I think, of male dominance that attempts to justify and legitimate the fact that men have power and women are powerless by saying that, in effect, men are better than women in some innate way. I mean, it has various kinds of subterfuges. Lionel Tiger talks about how men aren't better, they're just different, but that difference, of course, makes them dominant.
So do you not feel threatened by the women's liberation group?
Yeah, very definitely. But what that reveals, of course, is not that in some sense women's liberation is opposed to me, but that, again, because of the tremendous depth of oppression in our society, that I've been led to identify with those very forces which oppress me and oppress women, so that the struggle against women's oppression in part becomes a struggle against that element of myself which produces that sort of identification. I don't think that in any sense I or any other, or at least most men, are beneficiaries of male dominance.
There's a difference between women's liberation and the movement of women's liberation. Women's liberation as such is fine, and you know, I'm all for it, I suppose. But I think it's a fact that to most men, women's liberation, because of the movement, comes across as don't light a cigarette for a girl because that's putting her down. Don't open a door for her because that's putting her down. So you don't do any of these things, and that's the way it comes across. It doesn't come across as making equal wages or getting equal rights or equal opportunities. It just comes across in petty, stupid things like opening doors and so on, because they're so hung up with rhetoric and cliches and mouthing off and ego tripping.
I really should say that, you know, I do think women have been oppressed, especially as far as job opportunities are concerned, and the way that they've been kept, the old saying, you know, barefoot, pregnant in the kitchen. And I think that a woman who wants to get out into a career of her own and has the intelligence and the drive for it should be able to do it without going through artificial barriers set up because she's a female. But I don't think the women's liberationists as such are doing a job to do that. I mean, what they want is women like Judy LaMarche.
I don't see what they've got to be oppressed about, really. I mean, they're no more oppressed than men are when it comes to the things they're talking about. You know, they're oppressed. The fur manufacturers make money off their bod because they sell them furs. Okay, the guys who make Levi's make money off a man's
and
bod.
We got crotch deodorant too now. I mean, that's stupid. I mean, we're getting just as sucked in as they are.
Yeah. As far as job opportunities go, okay, maybe to a certain extent, there is a certain amount of prejudice. I wouldn't say oppression.
For instance, in supermarkets, my girlfriend makes $3.30 an hour as a girl in a meat department of a supermarket. I am a reporter for the Vancouver Sun. I do not make $3.30 an hour. And then women on the Vancouver Sun make just as much as men reporters. In the teaching profession, women make just as much money. I think there's probably some sort of prejudice at the university level, but that's one of the paradoxes that that always grew up in a place like this.
There's no reason for the women's liberationists as such, as a group, as a movement, to bring in the whole thing of the economy and the capitalist ethic and the oppression of the poor and all this sort of thing, because that, if that analysis is your analysis, then that applies to the entire populace and not just to women, and because it's exactly the same for men. It's just the capitalist ethic, and they don't discriminate between men or women.
Well, what about the fact that they view their oppression as part of a general oppression, and by bringing home women's oppression to women, therefore giving better understanding of all oppression, like the oppression of the blacks and the Vietnamese?
I don't think they're concerned with that at all.
Well, they say they are.
As a matter of fact, the capitalist ethic proves, in a sense, that women aren't really as oppressed as they like to think they are. They're the ones that hold the purse strings in most American families. They're the ones that the capitalists know they've got to get through to if they're going to make any money. It's not the men. They get their allowance, their cigarette money, and their beer money. And that's about all. But in most cases, we're in a matriarchal society in North America. And the fact that the advertising is directed towards the women shows that they're not really as oppressed as they like to think they are. I mean, they have to have kids. Okay, that's a biological trip. You know, God did something to them. You know, I mean, God oppressed them. You know, but and they have to stay home with the kids. But what the hell? I'd like to stay home and not have to go out and work. I would really like that. You know, I wouldn't like the kids. But then everyone has a choice whether or not they're going to have kids anyway. So I mean, their arguments right down the line are very specious.
No, they'll go against that argument because they'll say that you've got no idea of what the washing and ironing and cooking and cleaning and looking after the chillens is really like. And
I
that
just
it would
said
be
they didn't have to have chillens if they didn't want them.
I think you'll probably find as many men who want free availability of abortion as you will women, because a man gets just as hung up in a situation like that as a woman does.
Yeah, or
maybe not physically, but emotionally.
Right.
And birth control, you know, as well. I mean, prior to the whole abortion thing, I mean, if you had the birth control facilities and clinics and this sort of thing, you wouldn't run into the abortion problem or the pregnancy problem or anything like that. I think you find just, you know, easily as many men who want that, because nobody wants to get stuck with a kid that they don't want.
The great art of a woman is having a baby. That's her biological necessity. But for a man, true creativity comes out in artistic expression.
Yeah, but only because a man has no choice. I mean, if you could have a baby, then
I would much rather have a baby than have to write a book.
Yeah, it's much easier.
Same thing.
It's much easier.
Sure, you have to go through 9 months of labor pains.
But no rewrites.
The thing is, if women are intelligent and if they are conscious, they can take a look at the situation, decide that they're being oppressed, and they can do something about it. But they don't. Most of the women enjoy being sexual objects, as they were referred to, and they enjoy being a commodity, and they have no desire to do anything about it. And I really can't blame them. I mean, it's much easier to prepare yourself as a commodity than sell yourself to the highest bidder and be supported and have everything you want, then for you to go out and gain the intellectual knowledge, etc., and compete in a man's world and make your own living.
Sure, and what's wrong with that? I don't see
anything
wrong with it.
Nothing, really. I mean, if I could do it, I would. I can't.
Well, she's fashionably lean. She's fashionably late. She'll never rank a scene. She'll never break a day. But she's no drag. Just watch the way she walks. She's a 20th century fox. She's a 20th century fox. No tears, no fears, no ruin, yes.
This program was produced for the CBC by Valerie Hannell in the studios of CYVR UBC Radio, in conjunction with the radio workshop of the Department of Creative Writing at UBC. Technical assistance was provided by George Porkalab and Chuck Brad. Those heard were members of the Vancouver Women's Caucus and several members of the chauvinistic sect. This has been a CYVR UBC Radio production.